I can still feel that kind of sucking in of holding and trying to find a way to be okay. I felt I was more embraced when it was stormy, when the waves were crashing, because I was holding tight, that I needed that release, a place where I could be in tune with the waves, with the wind, and move quite frenetically if I needed to. I found that in company, I would be really, really, well, just not being able to speak and just want to retreat all the time. You know, whether it's just doing the shopping, going to an event or to meet up friends, I just couldn't connect. The only place I could connect was at that time at the beach, with the water, with the sea, the ocean.
Welcome to Wildflow Podcast with me, Charlotte Pointo. I'm an internationally award-winning menstrual cycle and embodiment coach, cycle mysteries guide, and founder of the First Moon Circle School of Menstrual Education for Children. Tune in for deep, heartfelt conversations with wisdom keepers, embodied leaders, and change makers on themes from cyclical living in flow with your menstrual cycle and body's wisdom, reclaiming rites of passages to normalize period positivity for you and the next generation, and exploring our embodied experiences, soulful transformations, and intuitive wisdom guiding you to express and embody your full power and the change you want to see in the world. Are you ready? Let's flow. Hello, beautiful women. Thank you for listening to Wild Flow. Today's episode is a really lovely conversation, a deep and moving one, and I'm excited to introduce you to my guest, Amanda Bond. Amanda Bond is a wild edge walker, a woman living literally on the edge of a continent who has met the edges of her identity, her roles as wife, mother, and daughter, of her menstrual cycle years, and the edge of the natural world within her and around. Amanda is a certified nature and forest therapy guide living in Jersey. She's a circle facilitator and she has been a practitioner of vibrational earth-based, rooted, compassionate, heart-centered therapies for 18 years. Amanda offers relational guidance in reconnecting with nature, self, others, and the earth. And after receiving a message from a glacier on the South Island of Aotearoa, she began to get to know the plant realms in early 2015. As Amanda navigates the depths of her grief, many sudden life-shattering moments of life as she knew it giving way, she had found solace, safety, and wholeness in nature. In this episode of Wild Flow, Amanda and I wandered through themes including how living on the edge has given Amanda the ability to self-regulate and find safety, especially in relation to supporting her sensitivity and neurodivergence. Her pain at not being held by others in her experiences of profound loss and how she found safe places to feel, cry, and release in nature. The earth as mother who can help us come back to wholeness. Medicine walks, vision quests, and forest therapy as tools for grounding, reconnecting, and opening up our senses and finding inner healing. Menstrual cycle issues as manifestations of loss and grief and nature's regulating effects. Crowning ceremonies and how Amanda is feeling the call to be initiated into her cronedom and what the wisdom of the cycles has offered Amanda. Tune in with a cuppa for this heartfelt conversation. Welcome, Amanda, to the Wild Flow podcast. How are you today?
I'm really good. Thank you so much, Charlotte.
Oh, good.
Really happy to be here.
Beautiful. I'm looking forward to getting to know you and having this chat. So let's start off with a cycle check-in as we always do. And I'll go first and then invite you to share yours. So a cycle check-in to me begins with a menstrual cycle check-in and then just checking in with how I'm feeling in relation to the other cycles and seasons within and around me, just as a way to drop into what's going on for me and what's going on in the space around me as well. So for me, I'm at an interesting place in my menstrual cycle. Actually, I didn't ovulate last cycle because I had COVID, and so I'm now in my day early 50s. I've just realized I've lost count. It's something like day 52. So a longer cycle for me, which I've not had in a while. And just when I've been in this position before and not had a menstrual cycle for a really long time, it's helpful for me to stop stressing about what's going on and where things are at and where it should be and just be with what is. It's not like being in a usual season of a menstrual cycle. It doesn't feel like, well, I haven't ovulated yet, so it's a spring. It feels like a sort of draining limbo land at times, neither here nor there, a bit of a void. So I've got some decent energy and confidence and clarity, but also I can feel that dwindling. It's like the end of my tether is in sight, and I'm hoping for my bleed soon so that I can have a bit of a reprieve. But in place of that, I'm just leaning into the moon cycle, which really helps me to live as if I have that menstrual cycle still. So at this point, you and I, you're in Jersey, which you can tell us in a minute, but just off the coast of the UK in the Northern Hemisphere, and I'm in Australia in the Southern Hemisphere, but no matter what, we share the same moon. And so we are past the third quarter moon, coming up to the last few days of this moon cycle. And so really in that descent and that disintegration and the really fading light and energy is really present with the moon. So that feels quite like where I'm at, I guess, in my body. And so I'm going to try to take some time over the next few days around the new moon sort of time, in order to give myself, a bit of rest time and integration time, and ask my husband to take the kids for a little bit, just so that I can, pretend I've got my period and give myself that reset that it would normally offer to me. So, that's how I like to the moon can remind me of having a cycle even without anything necessarily happening in any consistent way in myself, so that I don't keel over and burn out. And we're also just past the winter solstice here. So we are about halfway-ish between the winter solstice, which is the Yule Sabbat, and Imbolc, which will be the first glimpse of spring on the horizon. So we are very much still in deep winter, but the light is just starting to grow. I'm noticing that it's already not dark at 5:15, which it has been for quite a while, which feels lovely, just that little first glimmer of hope. That's where I'm going to leave that for my check-in today. I'm going to invite you, Amanda, to just share with us if there's any seasons, cycles that you connect with, and just how you're feeling perhaps in relation to that as well.
Thank you, Charlotte. And that was really fascinating listening to where you're at in your cycle and your perception of how you relate to those cycles and in your own life. I guess to start with, I'm Amanda and I live on a tiny island just off the coast of Normandy and Brittany in northern France. So I'm on the edge of the European continent, northernmost point of that coastline. And I feel like an edge walker. So that's where I am very often in cycles. So I don't have a menstrual cycle anymore. I went through the menopause in my early 40s through shock and trauma. And so I was gifted space afterwards without any menopausal typical symptoms. So my time was like abrupt really cutting an edge. So, yeah, it's interesting how that's just come out. I hadn't really ever thought of it that way before. So even as an edge walker, I did that, you know, there's like one to the other. Right now, how I'm relating to cycles in my life, I really kind of connect with the new moon particularly. And the dark side of the moon particularly. I was really deep in that time before the new moon, and really explore matters meaning to me in all aspects of my life. And I think right now I'm on a great threshold. I found that the period since going through the menopause has been really enlightening, and I'm growing more and more into my authentic self, probably more so than I have ever done in my life. And so the about being visible is very much in my kind of thoughts processes at the moment. And how do I do that? Am I visible? And so even, you know, this coming to be here was challenging, as things externally apparently prevented me initially with our first scheduled appointments. But now being here is just at the right moment, because I'm standing on a real threshold, and it's the opening up of something new, and I'm quite curious as to what it eventually will manifest, because then right now I'm really embodying this sense of the rising of the Pleiades in the southern hemisphere. And I always seem to connect with that new moon rising, or sort of the stars rising, as the new year. So I'm really feeling that right now. And so I'm in the summer, but it's a weird summer. And I'm really grateful just at this moment, having had a really intense couple of months, to finally thinking, whew, it was after the full moon, this kind of lightness started to come in. And this week particularly, it's really very noticeable that, oh, I've got time. And you know, things that I've been put aside for quite a long time, I'm picking up, and I'm giving myself this time between now and the beginning of September to accomplish things, creative things that I've wanted to do for myself for a long time. So it feels really, really potent. And again, this time in my cycle as a kind of, as a woman, then there's a huge shift between like my early 40s and now. So many extraordinary experiences that would never have dreamed of even, you know, being in my kind of life. So I'm really thankful for the abrupt end to my marriage, which opened up that opportunity for me. And taken a long time to get here. However, you know, giving that space to becoming and being has been such an extraordinary gift.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Amanda. That's so much in there, so much wisdom and insight, and so many pieces that just... like I can feel like this real alignment through all of these cycles and seasons, and all just like really kind of lining up in these own ways. Like it doesn't look like it lines up, but there's these threads of similarities and alignment just there. And wow, that's really Really special to hear. So thank you for sharing that. I'm really moved by what you were saying there about, you know, abrupt endings of being something that you've experienced. And but on the end, on the other side of that has been opportunities for connection to you, to your creativity, to like what is it that you are wanting to do in life and who are you? And you know, like these possibilities that you've got over the next couple of months as well. It's just, it's like a beautiful reminder that things can be abrupt and not as you expect at all. But on the other side of that is hope and space and potential for new possibilities. So that's just what I've been really struck by. And I'm really curious. So you've called yourself an edge walker or an edge dweller. And I'd love to know, you've called yourself as well, you refer to yourself as a wild edge walker. And I just would love to hear what that means to you and why you have sort of identified with that.
Okay, so it's a big question. It's a question I keep asking myself. So wild edge walker as a kind of name, as a kind of identity for myself, as to hold the potential of what I want to offer the world, allows me space to move in time as I need to. So I'm not in the thrust of things, I'm not in the melee of things all the time, so that I can stand where I need to be, so that I have enough space to be able to integrate and process all that I need to, and supported by nature primarily, and then dip in to different situations, circumstances, when it suits me. Obviously, that doesn't always work, but it's that kind of, standing my own ground and being able to move in a flow, in and out. And I realized that I had pretty much done that all my life. I was never able to feel like I belonged to one group of friends, for example, ever. And whether that was, from my early childhood onwards, I would be much happier standing on the edge of a group and being able to move to the next group if I wanted to, because I'm living in an island. It's at times been very close-knit community, a lot of cliques. And I was never comfortable, just being in one group and just like being just totally disregarding everything else that's happening around you. And so I always floated. And it feels like a good place for me. And very recently, I'd always been aware that I think differently quite often to other people. So I think I see patterns, I see threads, I see connections, big picture stuff. But I can hone in on detail when I need to, but it's not my kind of comfort place. Mm-hmm. And so I wondered about this, and then I was given an opportunity this spring to take up a teacher training course, and just a sort of fairly basic one, that the content actually, because it was about teaching styles and how to hold groups and things like that, in an educational form, there was a huge amount of content around diversity and inclusion. And so we looked at all the different categories that the law in the UK specifies. And one of the new kind of phrases that's being used as neurodivergent. Now, everyone is neurodivergent, that we're all different. But, you know, there are some that are more different than others. And I believe I and pretty much the whole of my family fall into that category on a spectrum. So, you know, I was always aware that my dad was just totally could not cope in social circles. I've been thinking about him a lot and how he lived his life, because he passed away on the equinox last September. And so processing a lot and really appreciating the way that he managed that inability and still was able to dip into social settings on occasion.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's really kind of, I hope that answers a little, because, you know, it's a question and a place that I hold. I'm more ready and willing to hold now.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas before I was all put in.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting. I have to say, when I read Wild Edge, the way Edge came to me, or Edge Walker, was like, I was thinking of, like, you know, edge of on the edge of something, like on the edge of some, you know, like a change or a transformation, or like, you know, you're on the edge of something, like a step forward, a step backwards, and kind of like the unknown. And I hadn't really thought about it in terms of on the outside of belonging. And so hearing you describing that, like, it feels a bit different. It feels different because this is relational, whereas I'd imagined it was more like a personal internal thing. And so, yeah, I think that's so powerful to think about, you know, all the ways that you've been living on the edge, you know, on the edge of things, but able to take that position now, like being comfortable taking that, going, this is actually what I need and what feels comfortable to me. And that allows me the choice to dip in and dip out, and, you know, like the tides move in and move out as you need to, especially having realized there's some neurodivergence within you and, you know, with your family as well. And, like, probably, I'm sure the sense that makes to you, but knowing that supports you as well, this position of being on the edge and, yeah, on an island in the middle of the, you know, in the sea, like between two countries. I think that's like, yeah, such a perfect metaphor, if that's the right word, for being on the edge.
It is so funny as well, and because Jersey doesn't belong to France or England or the UK, although it actually unified the two in 1066, or certainly Normandy.
But
this is sort of going into kind of real sort of old his family stuff. But so my dad moved here when I was a child with my mum, lived on the island until 1994, went to live in France, then went back to England in 2013. And it was then when he looked into a bit of his family history, the paternal side, and discovered that the family name of Bond wasn't English or from the southwest at all, in Devon. It was actually Norman, from Normandy. And so my ancestors were part of the army that defeated Harold. But they also were Norse, so they were Danes, they were Vikings. So it's really the patterns that shape our lives are extraordinary. So my dad, you know, his family came from this area 1,000 years ago. So he had no idea that he was actually, in effect, coming home.
That's incredible. Wow, how special to know that. That's beautiful. Thanks for sharing that. Yeah, that's fascinating. And so I'm really curious about your journey to like discovering this about you. And, you know, you've talked about like finding peace in nature as well. And I'm really interested to hear more about what it is about like the wild, like of the earth and nature and being in nature that's really supported you. Like when you first discovered that it was a wild edge, a place that was comfortable for you or whatever it was. I'd love to hear more about what it was that you were searching for in nature and what you found.
So as a background, I've experienced what is called ME/CFS with accompanying kind of conditions since I was a teenager.
And just to clarify, could you tell us what that is, if that's okay?
So ME/CFS is chronic fatigue syndrome, myalgic encephalitis. So it's a chronic illness with deep fatigue that is rarely restorative. You know, any rest is not particularly restorative. But it has taught me so much about pacing my life. Mm. It's given me space to actually be. That your question really goes to loss and grief. So I have 4 children. I'm really, really fortunate and grateful. And they've gifted me so much joy in my life. But I lost 5 pregnancies, 5 miscarriages, one of which was in between my 3rd and 4th child in the 2nd trimester. And was abrupt ending, totally unexpected, and just hit me like a ton of bricks. But with all the expectations of managing a young family, and I was a full-time mum with a very busy husband who was rarely at home, didn't feel I had any support at all. And it was, you know, it's a long time ago now, but, you know, still I know that losing through miscarriage or postnatally is just not spoken about.
Yeah.
And it's very much a taboo subject. You know, if you even try to bring it into a conversation, you can just see that, you know, that the other person or people are just like, whoa, you know, don't want to go there. And my whole, oh gosh, I can still feel that kind of sucking in of holding and trying to find a way to be okay for my kids particularly and manage each day, even though I was just devastated. I think the deepest feeling of loss I've ever remember. And I had my young child, and you know what, a toddler, not even really, only just a toddler, as well as 2 older ones. And I would go out with him while the others were at school, just go for long walks or just go and sit on the beach. And I found actually going to the beach, I'm really fortunate on an island, we can go to different kind of places very quickly. But I had a really lovely beach to go to, and it was springtime and the weather was iffy. But I found that actually I felt I was more embraced when it was stormy. When the waves were crashing There's so much kind of energy. I felt, I guess, because I was holding tight and there was so much energy in that holding, that I needed that release. A place where I could be, you know, sort of in tune with the waves, with the wind, and move quite frenetically if I needed to. And with a young toddler, you know, he just thought it was fun if I would just run along the sand or something, you know, and just jump around, you know, on the edge of the waves and stuff. So yeah, it was that kind of, it wasn't, you know, I think a lot of people, when they think about grief, they think about, you know, just flatness, you know, and no energy. But actually, I felt enormous energy. And it wasn't able to manage it normally. So I found that in company, I would be really, really, just not being able to speak. And just want to retreat all the time.
Back to nature, or back into yourself?
Back to myself, in the company of people away from nature. I mean, I was lucky I lived in the countryside. So I had that at home, but it was particularly when I had to go out and meet other people, different, you know, whether it's just doing the shopping or, you know, going to an event or to meet up friends, I just couldn't connect. And the only place I could connect was at that time at the beach, with the water, with the sea, the ocean.
It's very powerful. Thanks for sharing your story, and I'm so sorry you experienced that. I can only imagine the heartache and loss and the isolation you must have felt at that time as well. But how incredible to have found solace and a place to release and connect in nature that's all around you. And so did you learn from that nature was this place that you could turn to throughout other times of grief and loss or change or turmoil in your life as well?
Well, I actually remembered that I'd always done it. It just, you know, as a child, when my parents split, I was really young. And unusually, my brothers and sister and I were left in full-time care with my dad. And we lived in the countryside and opposite some woods. And I remembered that I used to spend all my time in the woods. And so the trees became friends, but they also became a place of safety and felt looked after and cared for. So the trees themselves became like a place I would think of as mother. And that has, you know, in my life now, has been translated into this deep connection and working for myself with nature and partnering with nature and being nature, and then helping others now to connect and build relationship in the same way.
It's really interesting because I really resonate with that. When I was a child and things were difficult or not safe at home, I would go out. We used to go out, you know, the whole day, like not like now where children can't really do that in the same way, but would go out for the whole day and, you know, just come home to eat. And we're just, I have memories and visions of being out in the woods or in the fields and or down by the you know, the streams and the rivers. And I grew up in the middle of England, not by the coast at all. But just feeling so tranquil, and like I could have a deep exhale and like everything was okay and much more predictable. I've always found nature much more predictable than people. I hadn't realized that until, you know, until I guess the last few years, whenever, I don't really know when it came to me, but I didn't realize that at the time as a child. It was, you know, it was just that place of safety. And yeah, I've, you know, spent years living in cities and just thinking, oh gosh, you know, just longing for open stretches of land. And now I live somewhere that's rural and we're surrounded by farms and fields and trees and, you know, all of just beautiful nature. And it just feels so, I feel my nervous system just completely so much more regulated, and I feel just so much better in myself and much more grounded, even in the frenetic days of having small children. It's such medicine. And you sharing that really reminds me of that. And I think, you know, I think it's fascinating that you're now helping people to, you know, go out into nature and guiding people to reconnect. I'd love to hear, I had a theory as well, not a theory, but a question. And I feel like, you know, people are afraid of nature these days. And maybe what might be found there or found in themselves. And I just wondered whether you find that in your work. And I'd love to hear about the work that you do and how you help people and what that gives people. But why do people need a guide to go out into nature?
So that's something that I'm often asked, or has been put on, you know, sort of in social media about why would you need a guide to go into nature? Well, it's just when you lose connection with anything, it's helpful to have a guide to help you find your way back. Because of my history of the ME and CFS and the breakup of my marriage, I ended up with, and I already had severe back pain for a long time, resulting from an accident in the 80s. But it became really very, very bad around about the breakup. And I really needed to find some solution to help me, because it was like really debilitating. And I went to a local chiropractor, and he was really helpful, lovely guy, but he just said to me, Amanda, if you get a chance, go to a cranial sacral therapist, because I don't feel like I can support your needs. And there weren't any in Jersey at the time, and especially in the biodynamic way of working with non-manipulative. And so I had wanted to start doing something to come back to my love of plants and natural medicine, which I'd always brought my children up on. And so I started this course in London in Neil's Yard, and it introduced me to being in a group of women on a monthly basis, as well as learning about natural medicine. And it was really incredibly curated course with some amazing presenters and teachers, and it was just a huge medicine for me at the time. And at the same time I was there at the actual Neil's Yard place in Covent Garden had various therapists available, and I was introduced to biodynamic craniosacral, and that depth of listening to my body by the therapist enabled me to come back into my, or start the journey of coming back into my body. Because, you know, I felt like I was totally out there. And so that was the beginning of the journey into the body again, and feeling safe to be in my body. And every single time I went into nature, I found that became easier. So it was what I was doing is now being in the framework of forest therapy guiding. What I was doing was connecting through my senses, through, you know, our outward senses, but also all of our internal senses, which are huge, which are massive. And so I was stepping in to me and who I was, am. And that early work shapes what I do now. And it was totally an embodied, felt experience, facilitated then because the craniosacral helped me so much with my back pain that I actually went into training as a therapist myself. And that was the beginning of my journey as a therapist. That couple of years training was like a real embodied journey. And then I practiced as a therapist for a number of years. But I had more and more women coming to me with all kinds of pain, anxiety, depression, but many issues around the menstrual cycle. And a lot to do with loss and grief. And I became more aware that I needed to offer more. And that I always, always brought in elements of nature. I practiced from home and had trees, plants as much as possible around, as well as elements within my practice room. And I always suggested to my clients that they practice, you know, just spending time outdoors, you know, and not suggesting any particular thing, but just saying, oh, is there a favorite place in nature that you like? You know, perhaps you could spend more time there. That simple things, you know, like that. And so I eventually ended up doing a master's degree in mindfulness-based psychotherapeutic practice in a Buddhist tradition. So it was a real synthesis of Western psychology and Buddhist psychology. And I'm not Buddhist. I'm not, you know, I don't identify myself in any particular religion, but I feel more connected with the earth and nature as mother. So that has led me through the depth processes in the psychotherapy training into more crying, huge amount of time in tears. Not just physical losses, but the loss of things that I had expected in my life. The way I thought things would play out and sudden, you know, and they didn't. So that was a more difficult process and to align with and accept. But, I actually, 2005 had an experience in nature on my own, solo retreat, if you like, 5 days off grid in a mountain, on the side of a mountain, that completely made me surrender. And it was the act of surrendering that changed my life, transformed everything.
Fascinating. That sounds amazing. What a powerful experience. I'm sure in that moment you had no choice but to surrender and realizing that you're still, you know, what you need and what you don't need and who you are and whatever else came up for you. I think that must have been, yeah, I can imagine that being really powerful. Incredible. And I love what you're saying about, you know, returning to the earth as mother as well, especially for, you know, people who've not had mother present in their life or perhaps in the way that's been expected, or when tending to losses and griefs and, you know, in those descent moments of life and those initiations. I've found that the earth as mother can really hold me and give me some of that feminine yin presence and holding and strength and support and unconditional love as well, in the way that the earth is there no matter what and can hold all of it and transmute a lot of energy and emotions away from us and back into composting it into the earth and helping to release in that way has been really powerful for me. I'd just love to hear a bit more about how, you know, any practices that you have that help you connect to the earth as mother. Is there anything that's not being shared that you would like to share about, you know, really being held in that way, I guess?
I think for me, it's always amongst trees.
Hmm.
And different trees will offer something unique. They're all unique. I think they have characteristics. Certainly, you know, the way that our stories as human beings connect us with woodlands and trees. You know, there's this kind of folklore in different traditions, that way of trees. And in recent years, I've tried to sort of acknowledge those, but put them aside and just meet a tree or a plant and sit with it and try and discover something for myself by listening. And just exploring, you know, with all my senses, sitting with a tree, you know, changing the way I move around the tree or sit or stand, getting to know the tree and just opening a space for communication and introducing myself. And then being, and on one occasion I was told, no, that's not your name.
what were you told was your name? You were given standing, a name.
Standing tall. It came in two phases. But standing tall with wind in her hair.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I see that in you. That's very special. Yeah. Amazing. I love that practice. That's beautiful. Thank you. And I'd love to ask you as well about, you know, you've talked about your neurodivergence and, you know, that you, you said that your passion and calling is to support others in understanding this sensory world. And, you know, just curious from your practice, yeah, why does this practice really support people with neurodivergence to, in a therapeutic way? Talk to us about that.
We're sensory beings. Our whole body is informed by our senses, but we live in a world that shuts that down. My feeling is that anyone who is neurodivergent, wherever they are, and that's movable, I believe, is perhaps more in tune with the senses, more able to feel more in some ways, and is affected by the way we live our urban lives, so that actually the bombardment of noise and busyness is so alien that we're kind of like canaries in a coal mine, and that have to retreat to be able to cope with the level of toxicity in the environment, in whatever shape or sense or form that is. So there's a kind of sense in feeling that there's a sensory overload, but it's a homeopathic response as you treat that by coming back to the senses. So you're treating light with light. Everything is sensory in nature. So when we return to it and reconnect, we are returning to a potential that is fully engaged and alive and connected, so that we can act as an individual, but we can also act as one.
Mm.
That's at the heart of it, I think, is my kind of knowing, if you like.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's taken me a long time to even begin to be able to put some words to this.
Mm-hmm.
But the becoming a certified forest therapy guide really has helped me work within a framework for me to share my own experiences and help others begin to have that similar relationship again with nature. But now I'm moving more into my own ground and feel that all these pieces of the puzzle that have supported me now need to be put together. And not to produce something, you know, another method or, you know, modality, but mm-hmm. just it's me being whole and mm-hmm. presenting all of me rather than these pieces that I say are me.
Mm-hmm. It's like you're harvesting all of your life's experiences and bringing them all together and just guiding people into all the things that you have, like in your toolkit, yes, but also all the things that, or just the full aspects of who you are. It's, I get that real sense. I think that's a really powerful gift of, you know, perhaps the other side of menopause, but, you know, that life experience as well, and having lived through so much as you have. I think that's an incredible place to be in. It sounds like really important work to help people to come back to safety in nature, safety in their body, in themselves, and maybe reconnecting to the whole of themselves as well. And I think that's really powerful to hear your stories on grief and moving through grief and being held by the great mother, the earth, and being able to be held in the safety of being able to express and release your emotions when people aren't able to hold that in you. I think you've shared so much with us that will speak to so many people about their own experiences of being able to contact and feel and express their own grief and their own sensitivities as well. So thank you so much, Amanda. And I'd just love to ask you one last question. I think, you know, coming back to cycle wisdom and you know, cyclical, our cyclical senses, what is the greatest gift that you have found in understanding your own cyclical nature?
Wholeness.
Mm.
Reclaiming pieces of myself that had been put aside, have been hiding, you know, that were hidden for safety reasons, and all the kind of things that we've been talking about. But also, you know, when the greatest gift amongst it all has been discovery of joy, and a sense of freedom. I always used to think, oh, searching for freedom, where is it? What is it? And it actually, now I'm realizing it's, you know, it's to be yourself and feel able to step beyond expectations. And so that's the gift of where I am now as a woman, and feeling more able to step into that. More and more. Some years ago, a young friend of mine who's a therapist invited me to join a crone ceremony. And so I think she wanted me to half support the thing as well. There was another woman holding the whole gathering, and there were the other women that were joining were older than me. So they were definitely in that kind of perceived age of Crohn's.
Mm.
And I was on the threshold, you know, at that time.
Edge dwelling.
Yeah. It was even there. So I was still, I really loved it. And I loved the whole idea and concept of being crowned. Because that's what the crone is, as crowned as the elder. And so feeling like I've stepped over that threshold now. And that I can really start to move in a very empowered way. That, you know, whereas for so long I would not speak up for myself, not say no. That I was always, this whole title of people pleasing really is, it's a survival mechanism.
Yeah.
And, so I've moved away from that. So, you know, if there's a challenge, you know, I will stand my ground now.
Amazing.
You know, and begin to be able to find the words in the moment. You know, the nervous system is regulating after being completely frazzled.
Yeah.
And so that our nature is my total support in that. So that's, nature helps your nervous system come back to where it should be operating from.
Yeah, that's so awesome to hear. I'm curious if you had, or will you have a croning ceremony for yourself?
I'm really feeling like that. I need to do something like that, you know, and this summer, maybe next month, it seems like a really good time to plan that. I'll go for a medicine walk.
Yeah.
And I haven't done that for a while, and find going on medicine walk either for a morning or a whole day so incredible, such an incredible experience.
Do you want to just quickly tell us about that, what that involves?
So it's a kind of you set up a threshold of where you choose to start from, and you set an intention for your medicine walk. Maybe you have some kind of question or some issue in your life that you need some clarity around. Or it could just be, you know, where am I going? Whatever scent that is. And so you set up that intention, you set up the initial threshold. You usually have someone holding space for you, but not always. But I usually set up a kind of circle on the ground with some natural elements. That is where I step into to start the medicine walk from, and I return to. So once I step in, I'm in a different realm. So I don't acknowledge anyone. I'm invisible. That, you know, that even if I see people, I just act as if I'm invisible. And as I move along the route, and it can deviate. So if I come, for example, to a fork in a path or something like that, then I'll stay there for a pause and think, so which way? You know, and I allow my body to inform me all the time. And what is the information I'm receiving from the nature around me? And there's so many metaphors come into play, symbolism. It's an extraordinary vision quest, if you like.
That's what was coming up for me, the vision quest. I undertook a vision quest in the probably 9 months ago now, and I was just really thinking of when I set up a circle around my camp and marked the elements and the directions, and did something similar without going for a walk because I wasn't allowed to leave the place, but to let my body just be there, like the needle of the compass that, you know, where do I want to sit and tend to, and you know, in which direction, and what is it in nature that's represented in those directions. And an amazing amount came up, even though I was just from the outside looked like I was doing nothing. I love that process of the idea of doing that as a walk, even if there are people there, and you know, it doesn't have to be for multiple days. It can be for, like you say, a little while, and but letting your body lead and guide you and really tuning inwards, setting that intention, setting into sacred space, whether you have a witness or not. I was thinking how beautiful that would be. It feels like, you know, in menstrual cycle awareness as a, you know, beautiful practice to do with your bleeding as like this vision time and setting an intention for the new cycle. And you know, you might do it with the moon, but you know, I just had this real thought like, oh, wouldn't it be beautiful to do, you know, instead of necessarily retreating to a still place for a time, but to go for a gentle walk out into nature and to do a medicine walk that way, and just letting it be this intention of, or anything, the start of anything or any time needing guidance. That's beautiful. That's a beautiful practice. Thank you for sharing that. I'd like to try that for myself. Yeah. Thanks, Amanda. Well, thank you. It's been absolutely beautiful to get to know you and to chat with you and to hear your story and your experiences and about the incredible work that you're doing. And I just would love to ask you to share with us where people can come and find you to find out more about your work, follow you, and see what you're offering.
Well, thank you so much, Charlotte. It's been a real pleasure and very easeful, flowing conversation. So really honour you in that, and you holding this.
Oh, thank you.
So where can you find me? So I've been talking about visibility already in our conversation today. So I do have a website, and it's www.wildedgewalker.earth. And I also on Facebook and LinkedIn and Instagram. I've actually got 3 separate profiles on Instagram. And I can send you details of that. Perhaps you can share.
I'll pop them in the notes,
The main one is Wild Edge Walker. And I changed the type very slightly recently. There's Wild Edge Walker Healing Blue. I'm changing stuff at the moment. So it's I'm tweaking, playing around to become more visible. And so it's an ongoing journey in showing up.
Excellent. I love that. It's this real, I can really feel this transition that you're in, this you know, I hope that you do have your crowning ceremony, because it feels like that's what you're really stepping into and claiming that, you know, you're here. You're arrived, and putting yourself out there as this powerful, magical crone that you are. So amazing. I love all of that. And of course, I'll pop all the links into the show notes so anyone listening can go and find Amanda. Thank you so much. Wish you a beautiful summer in the Northern Hemisphere. A blessed couple of months ahead with everything you've got going on.
Thank you so much. Really appreciating being here and just spending time with you. That's that. Thank you again.
Thanks, Amanda. Thanks so much for listening to Wild Flow. I love having you here. If you're loving this podcast, please show your love by leaving a review and a rating, and share your fave episodes with those who you think would love to listen to help share this passion project of mine with the world far and wide. To take the next step and learn how to live, love, and lead in flow with your cyclical nature, or for deep guidance and support in your cycle embodiment journey, discover my freebies, online journeys, trainings, and coaching on my website at www.charlottepuanto.com. Until next time, go well with the flow of your body's cyclic nature.